This is the Talk Theater in Chicago interview podcast for the week of November 9th. I'm your host this week, Ann Nicholson-Weber. And today we are going to be talking about a production of The Glorious Ones, a musical by Ahrens and Flaherty, which is currently playing at Boho Theater. It'll be there until November 21st. Here to talk to me about that show are two of the cast members, Dana Tretta, who plays Armanda the Dwarf, and Danny Smith, who plays Columbina, the leading lady. And then Nick Sula, who is the music director. And I brought these three together because I did want to focus on the music aspect of this musical. And one thing that I think is wonderful about this production is having a relatively large show at nine. Is it nine cast members? Is that right?
Seven
cast members. But in a tiny space, the Boho Theater is about as small as you can manage, which means a lot of things, I imagine, for how you go about producing a musical and maybe even the style of how you sing it. So maybe we could just start there. Nick, you could maybe set us off, and then Danny and Dana could join in.
Well, one of the things about the size of the space that's really enjoyable, actually, is the intimacy that you get and the direct communication with the audience in a way that you don't necessarily get at a larger venue. It's like performing in their living rooms. And so as far as preparing musically for what that means, there are basically two sort of, with the show, there are two phases. There's the show within the show, and then there's the parts where we actually get to see within the characters themselves.
Let me interrupt you, and we'll set it up just a little more, because some of our listeners won't know at all what the show is. The Glorious Ones is about probably the first official Commedia dell'arte troupe.
Right.
The lead character is the creator of Commedia. So it's a backstage drama in that sense. We see bits of their theater, and then we go backstage and learn how the actors and the company themselves live their lives.
Right. And so because of that, then we were able to sort of set up two paradigms, I'd say, for how we present vocally. Mm-hmm. We have the onstage time, when we have the wider projection as if we were in the streets of Venice, performing a street production for everybody to hear. But then we have the more intimate times. The actors move downstage much more and can communicate more directly. And so it becomes a softer tone at that point. And so we were able to kind of play with those contrasts quite a bit. Mm. The other thing about the space, one of the constraints that we have is that the band is actually backstage. By band, I mean myself and one other, a violinist, Kim Lawson. But because of that, there's no eye contact. And so we, throughout our rehearsal process, worked to really create that sort of that gelling, that ensemble, so that
you can read each other's minds.
Basically,
yeah. Right?
Right. Really, you know, and really feel the flow of where the song is going for that character, and really discover those places where we want to stretch or take time. And so it became, through that necessity of the practicality of not being able to see each other and make that kind of visual connection, we were able to discover some of those things and really lock them in, I think, in a different kind of way than you normally would.
Well, the show is very tight musically. I mean, it really is.
So you.
The fact that you achieve that without any eye contact is great. Well, maybe Dana and Danny, each of you could take a turn talking about, you know, what the preparation for you as a singing actor for this show was like, and how it might be different if it has been compared to other musicals you've done.
Yeah, I found that it was so wonderful to be able to play with the softer tones. And to me, what's so important as an actor singer is to be as honest as possible and to really tell the story of the song. So it's really wonderful in this space to be able to pull back and quiet things down and really think about what you're doing and share your most intimate moments with the audience in that way. And you're not mic'd. It doesn't have that tin can feel. It's really honest and rich. And I think that's what's so special about live theater, and to be able to do it in such an intimate space I just think it's been really wonderful preparing for the show.
Mm-hmm. Let me, why don't we right now then interject an excerpt from one of your beautiful numbers, which is, it's called My Body Wasn't Why, is that right?
Yes.
So why don't we, this was actually recorded right before we started the interview, but we can listen to it now.
That night, I looked in the mirror and added up the sum. The weary tints and the faded bits of the woman I'd become.
So I imagine that that number really epitomizes what you're talking about this intimacy that you can get. And this is one of the backstage numbers. This is what Nick was talking about, the intimacy, the coming in, interior. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, in working on that, how does it change, or does it, when you know you're not going to be mic'd? Does it change your interpretation? Does it change anything vocally?
It does, I think, slightly. But I think it just allows you to be really honest and to just focus on telling the story without concerning yourself with, I don't know, this other element, the microphone. So I love working without mics.
I mean, as an audience member, I have an enormous preference for it. I think just hearing the human voice unamplified is a completely different experience. Mm.
Part of it became sort of authentic for this particular piece. I mean, this is, again, going back to the idea of street performers and kind of opening that up. So rather than piping through any electronic apparatus, we have more of a raw feel, right? We have this this direct communication.
Well, and of course, we're in, what are we, what century?
16th century.
16th century Italy. So, well, maybe, Dana, we could now listen to your number that we recorded before, which definitely epitomizes the other aspect of the show, the other thread. And this is part of the show. You're doing this for the street audience. And I'm not sure if the audience would be able to pick up quite how naughty this is without the choreography. But anything you think is a double entendre is.
It is.
Gondoletta gets you wet.
beautiful thing is a learning.
Surely no many gentlemen in her way.
I'd like her to learn to stuff the sausage, like her to learn to pound a pizza, like her to learn a little something new. I tear and tell her, I ride the pony, I like her to whip the Zabaglione, roll the gondola, blow the piccolo. Every day, I learn something new every day.
So maybe you can talk a little bit, Dana, about your own feelings about, you know, preparing for this show.
Well, one of the first things that our director said to me was, the key to this song is to play it as innocent as possible, because mm-hmm. that's where the comedy lies. And that was kind of a challenge for me, because I'm used to playing, unfortunately, very bawdy, not unfortunately, fortunately, very, very bawdy characters.
But kind of doing the dig in the ribs uh-huh. as you do it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. So this was, it was really fun. But reminding me, he was always reminding me the whole time that this number, though I'm supposed to be innocent and these things are happening to me and, it, you know, I don't even realize it, it's still a performance. Mm-hmm. And that's, and remembering how to sing it that way and to kind of make my voice fit that idea, this almost childlike person, uh-huh. But with this, you know, I have something to tell the world. This is exactly what I need to shout out. So it's totally fun. And I'm lucky enough to get a chance then to have an intimate moment
right.
as well. And I agree with Danny. I love to approach a song from the acting standpoint first. Mm-hmm. And though the Tarantella isn't exactly that sort of song, it's still a performance in its own way. And it's delightful.
With a lot of fun choreography.
Yeah.
Well, something you just said really struck me, which is that you're playing someone putting on a performance. Mm-hmm. So there's this double layer. Mm-hmm. It's not just that you're an actor doing a show, but you're an actor doing a show. Mm. Does that change anything about that performance?
Well, I think when we started running it in this space, I started to get a little worried, because I'm used to performing in small spaces like this. Chicago storefronts are usually where I'm hanging around. But I thought during the Commedia pieces, I'm like, I'm too big. Mm-hmm. I'm too big. I feel rubber-faced right now. Mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. But that's how it was. And you had to attract people from far away. And it's
across this, the plaza.
Right. Yeah. And even though we're in this tiny little space, you need to show the contrast. But then that makes it pays off, because then when it comes time for the personal moments, mm-hmm. it's like you almost feel, since it is so close, like you're on film, you know,
yeah.
and
yeah.
you don't really have to do much at all, but just feel mm-hmm. what you're saying.
Yeah.
So that was just kind of a learning process. And definitely when the audience came in, that added a whole new aspect too, because something is funny, something
different
is funny to everyone. Thank
right.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So people get a kick out of lots of different things in
right.
this show, and
right.
it kind of, you just roll with the punches, because as long as someone's enjoying it, that's the great thing. But yeah, this piece has a little something for everybody, yeah. I think.
That's a really interesting point that I never thought of in my life, that a small audience will vary more than a big audience, I would imagine. Because a big audience, you're going to kind of get a representative, you know, sample. With a small audience, you could have much more eccentric responses, and therefore you have to be prepared for mm-hmm. much more difference in the audience show to show. Having just stated that thesis, is it true?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Uh-huh.
They're absolutely another character in the show.
Oh, uh-huh.
yeah, absolutely.
And have to be, because, yeah, I mean, we would stop if no one came, you know, yeah.
right.
Of course. Well, maybe we wouldn't, but. But I mean, just last night we had a very large audience, I think about 30 people.
Uh-huh.
That's a bit, that's as
every
much as theater
full,
can
right?
hold, right? And they were a little on the quiet side. Mm-hmm. I think everyone was enjoying themselves, but there weren't a whole lot of guffaws or anything like that. Mm-hmm. The night before we had, I think, 7 people, the mm-hmm. same number as our cast, and totally different.
All over the place.
Yeah. Laughter here yeah. and there. So, you know, again, hopefully everyone is enjoying it, but yeah, different responses. But mm-hmm. that, you know, that's the whole fun of live theater.
Right. Well, let's talk more about the process of shrinking the show. Nick, I hadn't thought about the fact that you were the one who arranged it for these two instruments. right?
Originally, I believe a 9-piece orchestration down to just myself and a violinist, as I said, my piano and violin, which I think, again, for this space certainly works, both, you know, in character of what we're doing here with the intimacy, but also just physically.
Mm-hmm. Right. Where would you put any more people, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And how would you pay them?
Right. Yes, and practically, yes. Mm-hmm. What we did, and what one of the things I searched for in this was to get as much color out of not only the instruments, but, you know, variances in color within the actors' voices, like we talked about with the two sort of shades, even within the instruments, you know, different shades within the violin, with, you know, with what I'm doing with the piano. And then also the actors themselves get to play some of the instruments throughout. Mm-hmm. We have some sort of peppering of various percussion. Danny, of course, plays a recorder in some points during the show. And Dana plays some tambourine. And we have another actor playing guitar. It sort of helps to add some color. Mm-hmm. And with that, then the broadens basically what you can get out of just the small size that we are. I think speaking of color, just a lot of the fact that the cast of characters is such a hodgepodge. We have, you know, basically a different archetype, truly of each of the commedia types are represented here. And that goes vocally too. So each of the solos and each of the sounds that you get there really define that character. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite points in the show, though, is when towards the end, all of those voices come together and sing basically an ensemble solo. It's one of those intimate moments that's the solo that generally everybody has their own intimate moment. Mm-hmm. But then during the song Armandus Sack, all of the ensemble members come together and open their souls. And so you have this really joyous, powerful moment where everybody is doing their own thing and their voice comes together as one. Mm-hmm. And it's really just that's kind of the pinnacle. It's my favorite part of the show at that point.
Well, we certainly hear that contrast in colors just from the two small excerpts we listened to of these two wonderful actor singers. Well, maybe you two could talk about working with Nick. Of course, he's in the room, but I think that probably a lot of listeners don't have a clear sense of what the music director does and what he might bring to each of your performances. So,
sure, I'll start. Well, we started off with table work and really talking about the characters and making sure we all had a similar understanding of commedia and how we were going to approach the show to get us all on the same page, which was really wonderful because we were able to take that then into music rehearsals with Nick. And we started off, I think we started off rehearsing our solo numbers first to get those down. Mm-hmm. And then we had a couple of group rehearsals to learn all of the music. And the wonderful thing about working with Nick, and I've had the luxury of working with him a couple of times now, is that he really allows you to, he understands the actor's process, the director's process, and he complements those so well. And he's such a, I don't mean to toot your horn over here, but he really celebrates the work that you do and likes to take that journey with you musically and discover things together. So it just makes it such a joyful process.
Is Nick, are you a singer yourself?
Not professionally. I've had some vocal training.
I was going to say, because I thought even as we were warming up to do those two numbers, I might have heard a little bit of what I would call coaching, vocal coaching.
Right, exactly.
And I could imagine as a singer that having a vocal coach, having the music director act as a vocal coach could be risky because you've got your own technique. They may or may not understand it. If someone tried to get too interventionist, kind of, I could imagine that causing problems. Mm-hmm. Obviously, neither one of you is going to say that happened here. But are there differences in how different music directors approach their role? Maybe you could talk about
that. Oh, I think definitely. But Danny said it beautifully. Mm-hmm. I think Nick is wonderful to work with. And I need all the help I can get, really. With anyone that I work with, I'd love to hear any sort of feedback. Mm-hmm. And what I know, and I've known Nick for a while, but this is the first time working with him, and I didn't know what to expect. And my first rehearsal with him, I absolutely loved, because he did take the time to not just plunk the notes, and some music directors just play the music, you know? Uh-huh. And no, he approached it in a beautiful roundabout way where we were all working together. And just even parts where, you know, if that makes you feel good, smile when you sing it. Mm-hmm. And I try it, and yes, good, good, good. Mm-hmm. And just that there was positivity always in the room. And and I think he has, as good music directors should, a wonderful ear to hear when things need to be filled out and more color needs to be added, mm-hmm. and when it's time to just relax and tell the story. And mm-hmm. and I do think that the show sounds wonderful, thanks to Nick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, what are the, kind of the colors on the palette that you use vocally? I mean, there's obviously tempo, which I'm assuming Nick is pretty much going to set, or maybe not.
Well, tempo it's certainly set, but it's flexible as we go, and that is one color, phrasing, taking those pauses where necessary. I believe in one of the excerpts here, when Danny's saying here, we have that sort of really poignant moment. It's sort of that realization. She builds to a point, and then everything drops, and it's just her, sort of just bare on the stage there for that moment.
Because there's no underlying instrumentation.
There's nothing at that point, and it's just that pause. I think that's one of the colors, that kind of idea of phrasing and silence, the use of silence in the appropriate places.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever, one of the things that I'm a classically trained singer, not musical theater, and I noticed that musical theater singers use straight and vibrato, that shift, I would say more dramatically than classical singers are likely to. Is that something you do consciously? Do you say straight, okay, now I open it up and there's the warmth of the vibrato? Or is it something that just happens as you learn a piece? It's probably different for different singers.
But. Yeah, I personally find it comes sort of organically, just depending on the song and the moment in the song. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have any different feelings about that, but...
I think so. And and that's a discussion I think you have with your music director as well. Mm-hmm. And hopefully you're working with someone that, you know, it's a good give and take. But yeah, I feel like personally in this show with a couple of different songs I have, I'm kind of all over the place. But it works for me and for my character.
You mean in vocal color?
Yeah. Uh-huh. And yeah, there's a lot of straight tone that happens in the tarantella. And
right. That's that innocent sound, right?
Right.
Kind of voice soprano.
It gives it a simplicity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think I was a little nervous at times too while rehearsing. I'm like, I don't think I sound very pretty at all. Uh-huh. I'm just kind of like squeaking all over and yelling all over the place. But that's okay, because it works for my character. So yeah, I think it's you take a different approach, and that's maybe we all need to get into a classically trained environment again someday, because we're probably not doing great things with our voices all the time. But
you've got decades to go. Something, right?
Exactly. It's fun. Keep
Well, that raises something else, which I'm interested in. How much as a singer character do you change your vocal sound to match the character?
A lot. I mean, it really depends on what you're playing. Just with the tarantella, I feel like everything is kind of exploding out of the top of my head, and it's loud and it's fun and it's sing-songy and cute. Mm-hmm. And then at other points, I feel like a woman singing, because that's the emotion that's coming out of my heart. I play this character that, you know, lives a life of unrequited love, and she doesn't really tell anyone. It all stays inside. But this passion she has, not only for a man, but for her career, gets to come out and be celebrated at the end. And that's kind of when the mature dwarf voice gets to speak. Uh-huh. So yeah, it sounds different.
I feel the same way with near the beginning of the show, I sing a song with, I kind of sing it with Flaminio, called Making Love. And I'm very upset because I've been waiting for him for an hour. And it's got a much more brassy, sort of in-your-face kind of tone to it. And then My Body Wasn't Why, which you heard earlier, it's so much more a personal moment, take down the mask. And I really wanted that to have a much warmer tone, kind of give the audience a big hug and welcome them in to this little intimate moment. So I think absolutely.
Well, it's not, and in a way, that's the opposite answer than what I meant, because it sounds like you're both saying that you would use your full range of color and expression and not limit it by saying, well, this character would never sound like that, the way you might in mannerisms or the way you move within a characterization.
I think in other shows it definitely applies. For instance, Jekyll and Hyde, which Boho did last summer, or 2 summers ago, I guess it was now, we all had a Jekyll and Hyde character, 2 characters within the show, and we picked very, very extreme vocal qualities for both. I played an aristocrat, an aristocratic woman who I very much, she was very soprano and very nasally, and and then a really low,
get
rich
all your
sort of, yeah, and then a courtesan actually, and who was very much in her, in this low, rich range. So that was a perfect example of vocally
creating a character.
Exactly.
Right. And it depends on the show, like you said. And in this particular case, the music is sort of such that we have that visibility into the inside the character, and like you mentioned before, it's an actor playing an actor playing a character. So we have these layers, and so in that case, there's more a chance for a broader range for the different situations that the current scene, you know, the current scene happens to be at that time. And it's one of those ideas of color that we wanted to use to really help make that distinction. This is my onstage presence. This is my sort of internal character.
My real self
at that time.
I get the impression that you can be very detailed in your work in a setting like this. And maybe that wouldn't be the case in a – sometimes I have the impression that a big musical is almost all traffic – control,
it's like
you know,
machine.
The rehearsal
well-oiled
process.
Machine.
Yeah. Is that fair? Do you think that's true?
I would say so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've had the pleasure of working with some bigger companies, and it's been great. The process is about 2 weeks of rehearsal and then right onto the stage. Right. But the directors that I worked with at these bigger companies always, said, you know, I wish we had the time
to explore
a little bit more. And you'll find it, but you're already on stage at that point. And I mean, it makes the run very interesting because it's you're constantly like, oh wow, that's good, that's fun, this is a good show. Okay, if only we knew that when we opened, you know.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of one of the wonderful things about working in non-equity theater here in Chicago. You're not paid for the extra time that you put in, but you do have extra time to really find some wonderful stuff. And that's why I love to do it creatively.
Yeah,
I'm being fed. And sometimes when I've worked with bigger companies, I'm still hungry after I'm done working. Not that the work isn't stellar. It's the productions. It's just you forget – I think when you've got all that money and have all these big, beautiful things to put on, you forget that a story is being told. And you know, honestly, I've gone to see tons of big shows on Broadway and that sort of thing. And when you're so far away from someone, how do they show you, you know, what they're feeling? And sometimes it is just the voice that they have. So that's why there's so much
and
concentration.
It's a mic'd
voice. Right, a mic'd voice. Yeah. Yes, totally. Mm-hmm. But it works. You know, I've been in the back seat in the mezzanine all the way, and like they're a tiny little dot on the stage, and I'm still crying because I'm feeling an emotion. But I'm so used to now being in someone's living room.
Right.
And literally being able to reach out and touch them. It's just, it's kind of, it's scary and sweet at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's a little like a drug.
Well, it seems like that's a perfect place to end, particularly because you guys have a call in 7 minutes. I want to thank you so much. And I want to thank you, Nick, for jumping in and you and Danny being the Ben's chorus for Dana's number. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.